Haney, Vinny Serrato, Nolan McGraw, The Vinny and Haney Show, 105.7 The Fan.
Good morning, everybody. No, I'm not Bob Haney. I'm Bruce Cunningham filling in today. Vinny Serrato also off today, and my man Cordell Woodland is in the studio with me. Cordell, it's taken me back. In the embryonic days of your career, you used to be on the other side of the glass running the board for my Saturday show, right?
Yeah, man. I'll tell how quickly things have changed, but it's good to be on this side. Don't get me wrong. I still miss playing the music. You know, I always remember that. But yeah, it's been a cool transition of being on the other side, and days are busy, busy, busy this time of year.
Well, you did it the right way. I have a friend, Milton Kent, who's a professor at Morgan, and they're all so proud of you. And
my guy.
I said to Milton, I said, the thing about Cordell is that he got it the old-fashioned way. He put in the work, you know, and it's fun to see it pay off, and I'm really proud of everything you're doing here. I wanted to say that right off the top.
Yeah, I appreciate it, and Professor Kent, he was one of those professors at Morgan that I always remember he was tough on me. I mean, that's the only way he knows, but he always used to say it was because he could see the potential. He couldn't live with himself by letting me try to sneak by the way I wanted to at the time, but I appreciate him and all the great professors over at Morgan for helping me out.
In the early 90s, he was their media critic for the Sun.
Yeah.
And he Max Morgan and myself, who were doing sports at Fox 45 at the time, he did a piece on us and just ripped us. So I'm at Memorial Stadium in the food line, and he's right behind me. And I'd never met him. And I turned around, hey, Milton, I'm Bruce Cunningham.
Oh, wow.
He shook my hand. He said, you sure you want to talk to me? I said, hey, man, the job is called critic, right? I mean, that's what you'd say. I had no problem.
It's in there. I mean, he knows how to be honest. It's all he knows. So that honesty may not be, it may not feel good when you're on the receiving end of it, but you got to appreciate it.
Hey, we've been friends for 35 years.
Yeah.
Me and him. He's great. 410-583-1057 is the number to call. The Ravens in camp today, and they've got this practice with the Colts tomorrow. And Cordell, I heard Vinny last week say, since the starters don't play in a preseason games, that these controlled practices, that's going to be their preseason, right?
Yeah, I mean, John Harbaugh kind of hinted at that as well yesterday. He did tell us after the stadium practice that you won't see a lot of the stars in the preseason game against the Colts. I wouldn't really expect to see them at all in the preseason, because when's the last time we have seen Lamar and some of those guys play in a preseason game? But yeah, these joint practices against the other teams, they're scripted, you know, so these coaches are able to kind of come together and put the plan together in place to be able to, in John's case, put stuff in there to know, all right, I'm not going to play a lot of my ones in the games. Let's get them a lot of run in these joint practices. So that'll be the thing that we're looking for. They have another one against the Commanders in a couple of weeks as well. So those will kind of serve as their preseason games.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, because it's right up against me on Saturday, that last preseason game. Noon start. Thanks a lot, guys. I'll be like Terry Ford. I've never done an in-game show. This will be fun. Public practice yesterday at M&T. People got to see the improvements and all of that. We'll get to that in a minute. But the thing that everybody's talking about this morning is the kicker, Loop. Tell me your impressions of him.
Yeah, I mean, Tyler Loop right now, I mean, he's the guy. They cut John Hoyland the other day. And, you know, John Harbaugh told us that was more of a numbers game with the rosters and everything. They've had a couple of injuries. They've cut some guys. They've also added a few players as well. So I guess that the way the numbers worked out, they didn't feel like they could afford to have two kickers on the team, despite them liking Hoyland. I actually think that they did like Hoyland. I never truly felt like he was going to win the job over Loop. Loop would have to be outrageously bad, or Hoyland being kind of undeniably good for that to go that way. But Loop has really, since then, he's kind of taken charge. 11-for-11 yesterday, quite a few extra points in there, but he did hit a 60-yarder, hit a 56-yarder yesterday too at the stadium.
You hear the whole crowd go,
oh yeah. Look, at the stadium, at the facility during the practices, all eyes are on 33 when he goes out there to kick. And even for Tucker, you know, that wasn't really, you get spoiled with the consistency over time. So you're kind of just, that's when you want to go to the bathroom or get on the phone and start doing anything else, because you expect to get what you're going to get out of Tucker. And with Loop now, everybody's looking to see what this kid looks like. And especially as of late, he's been really good.
And I think psychologically, they had him do all those attempts yesterday on purpose. Mm-hmm. They wanted him to kick in front of a crowd. And conversely, I think they wanted the crowd to see him succeed.
Yeah, no doubt. No doubt. I mean, he's and that wasn't his first time kicking at the stadium. He has gone over there to get some kicks in.
But not with fans in the stands.
Not with fans in the stands. That was different for sure. And like you said, the crowd was definitely into it before he kicked it, after it. And even he played to the crowd a little bit. He kind of was getting the crowd hyped up. So good to see your kicker with some sort of confidence like that. And now we'll really get to see what it looks like as they get into these preseason games starting Thursday.
I got to get used to a kicker wearing 33.
Yeah.
I'm not used to that at all.
Well, you're still getting used to linebackers wearing single digits. And, you know, everybody's changing their numbers up these days. No number is safe anymore. Well, we might see linemen wearing 10.
It's that way in baseball, too. You never wanted a number in the 60s, 70s, 80s, mm-hmm. but they all wear them now. You know, it's just weird. Getting back to Thursday, though, we talked about how the starters aren't going to play. What about Starks? Is Starks going to get a few?
I think Starks will get out there. I don't think he'll play a lot, but I wouldn't be surprised to see him get a series or two. I do think they want to allow him to get his feet wet in a real game. And again, I don't expect to see a lot of him. By the time we get to the third preseason game, is he playing? Maybe not.
Right.
But the first two games, I do think they're going to want to get a couple of series out of him just so he could get some real live game action. And look, he'll be the guy out there. He's used to being next to Hamilton and those dudes, and that'll be the case during the season. But in a preseason, it's kind of on him. So that's when you really get to see, all right, does he know where to line up? Does he know how to tell everybody else where to line up as well if need be? So I think that'll kind of be the good test on the mental side for him in these first two games.
Green, on the other hand, will probably see more snaps than Starks. They really need to see him in action, don't they?
No doubt. And I think they want to see him hit a quarterback that's not theirs right now. And Green, I think the sky could be the limit for him. I mean, he shoots out of his stance like a bullet, and that's kind of the first step. You want to win right away, and he does a good job of that. But he has a nice arsenal of moves as well. He knows how to convert speed to power. He's a good tackler, and talking to him the other day, he wants to really showcase what he can do in the run game. Everybody talks about him leading the nation in sacks, and that's cool, but you got to be able to stop the run. So he wants to show that he can seal the edge. He can tackle running backs, get some tackles for loss as well. So I agree with you. I think he's going to get more run than Starks.
Here's an interesting fact about Green. You may know this, you may not. He went to Lawrence Taylor's high school.
Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, greatness. I mean, that's good shoes to follow on the field.
Excuse me. Pardon me for that.
Thinking about his future gets you choked up a little bit. I mean, I get it. I get it. I've seen the kid in practice a couple times. We've talked to his coach at Marshall. Everybody's choked up about him.
I'm from down there, though, so I kind of root for those guys. Okay. You know, I played against LT in high school, and believe me, the talent level down there. Here's the most amazing thing. Not that any of our listeners now will be interested, but Allen Iverson, high school football. Had he not gotten into trouble, he'd be in the NFL. Yeah, Have you ever seen those clips of him playing?
Allen Iverson is my favorite basketball player ever. Yeah. So probably my favorite athlete ever at this point. So, yeah, I'm well-versed in his ability of what he was able to do at the quarterback position on the field. And like you said, if it wasn't for that bowling incident, and it's crazy how life works. Would he be a first ballot Hall of Famer as a quarterback? I don't know, but he was as an NBA player.
Well, you're a DC guy. The thing that saved you, and I'm sure you saw the 20.
Of course.
All the football coaches backed off.
Mm-hmm.
The only coach that stayed there was John Thompson.
Yep.
And boy, did that pay off for him.
Yeah, and I was lucky enough to form a relationship with the late, great John Thompson. And we used to have plenty of conversations about AI. So, yeah, I mean, like I said, it's funny how life works, man.
It really is. All right, coming up. The Ravens roster is great. In fact, some people are saying it's the best roster the Ravens have ever had. It's going to be hard for UFAs to make this team. It might be hard for some of these draft picks to make this team. Are there any camp battles going on right now for roster spots that are worth talking about? We're going to get into that next. Stick around. The Vinny and Haney Show continues. We've talked at length, Cordell, about this Ravens roster, and most people think that this is the best roster in the NFL. There are some who think this is the best roster in Ravens history. So what that means is this is going to be a really tough club to make, you know, especially for UFAs, undrafted free agents. The Ravens are famous for having at least one every year. Mm-hmm. That's going to be tough. Some of the lower level or round draft picks, it's going to be tough. What are some battles going on right now we should be watching?
Well, not many. The kicker battle was one of them. And even that one, like I said earlier, I think everybody knew that Tyler Loop was the betting favorite, but that ended earlier than I think a lot of us expected. The left guard battle, that's been one to watch between Ben Cleveland and Andrew Voorhees. And I asked John after practice, what was that, Saturday, about that left guard battle. And he did say Voorhees is in the lead. Cleveland didn't get off to a great start of camp. Voorhees has been consistent. Cleveland's been getting better as of late. But right now, they, in their mind, 72 is the guy. They've been alternating opportunities for those guys in practice, but it does seem like that's Voorhees' job to lose. Outside of that, you got the punt return battle. They did draft LaJonte Wester out of Colorado this year.
Yeah.
I think, look, they drafted him to be the punt returner, so I do think they're going to give him every opportunity. Dayton Wade is probably a sneaky guy to watch in that battle as well. Still, Tylan Wallace also, but you know, for a guy like Wade, the only way he makes this team is if he wins that punt return job. Right. That might be the case for Wester, too. I'm curious to see what they do with Wester. I think they'd love to put him on the practice squad if he doesn't win the punt return job. But if I'm betting right now, I would say he probably does win it. A lot would have to go wrong for him to not get that job. Other than that, I think everything else is kind of set in stone.
Interesting thing. I was listening closely to you just now, and all those positions and all those battles you mentioned, none of them are on the defensive side of the ball.
Yeah, not really. I mean, I wouldn't expect a lot of linebackers on the field this year. Obviously, their secondary looks like it's going to be a big strength of theirs, and they're going to show that during the games. So I think what you're going to get on defense, you're going to get a lot of situational guys like Mike Green, for instance. You know, Mike Green may not be a quote-unquote starter, but you'll see him out there on third downs.
Right.
You'll see him out there on second and long. So I think that's what you'll see. You'll see some of these depth safety guys get out there on some third and long situations when they want to go three safeties out there. So it may not be position battles. I think they're looking for guys that they can put out there in certain situations.
Well,
now,
also, if you're a defensive player, you better be willing to play special teams.
Yeah.
That's going
to
be your
you
route,
have
right?
To. You have to be able to play special teams. You think back to like Patrick Queen, who was a day one starter as a linebacker. He was also a day one starter on special teams as well. So special teams has always been the way to John Harbaugh's heart, and that hasn't changed.
They had a player, you might remember him, Adalis Thomas.
Mm-hmm.
He weighed 280. And I remember they used to put him out at gunner.
Yeah.
280-pound gunner running down the field, you know. Earlier, you mentioned Ben Cleveland. They've been very patient with Ben Cleveland. He's been around a while. In fact, mm-hmm. he got a second contract out of them, which surprised a lot of people. But somehow, Cordell, if Voorhees is ahead of him right now, I wouldn't be surprised if they released him.
Well, the thing about Ben Cleveland is what he has going in his favor right now is they don't have a lot of offensive line depth. And so they do need as many bodies as possible. Emory Jones right now, the guy that they drafted this year, he still hasn't even gotten on the field yet. And we asked John for an update yesterday. He's still in wait-and-see mode. He's waiting for the doctors to clear him. So I think that sounds like
a red shirt to me.
Yeah, most likely. It wouldn't shock me if we see him on IR at some point going into the start of the season. But I think Cleveland has that in his favor. And also, he's good on special teams, like we just mentioned, on field goal block. He's kind of a building out there. He's so big, he literally is able to set up shop and nobody can run through him. So he has some qualities. And to his credit, he may not be a great practice player, but his game film is a little bit of a surprise when you watch Ben Cleveland. So I do think they'll try to keep him around for some depth because they don't have much of it.
As long as the tush pushers around, he's got value. Because he does. He blocks out the sun. Mm-hmm. You know, he's a big, big dude from down there in Georgia. Keaton Mitchell. The running backs were a strength of this team last year. They got great snaps out of both of those mm-hmm. guys. What is Keaton Mitchell's role here as you see it?
You know, I think Keaton, it would be great if he wins that kick returner role. And he's talked about that openly. He wants to have kind of this Devin Hester impact on the Ravens special teams. That'd be great. You know, we look at how good their offense should be, how good their defense should be. If they can have an elite returner back there on kickoffs, and I would expect there to be a lot of returns on kickoff this year, because how many teams want to allow opposing offenses to start at the 35-yard line? Not many. So if he is able to be back there and get the ball in his hands, watch out. Keaton's speed is definitely back. And I think anybody that was at the stadium practice yesterday, You got to see it. He scored, I think, two touchdowns, one on a nice run that he bounced out, another one where maybe he wouldn't have scored a touchdown, but he definitely broke it out for a couple, for like a 20-yard gain. So I've been impressed with Keaton. It's going to be tough for him to get some snaps on offense. Derrick Henry's obviously there. Justice Hill was great for them last year.
Man, oh man.
As a receiver on third down, even as a pass blocker at times as well. And he's just a high IQ football player. So I do think they want to get him out there as much as possible. And Keaton may have to take the scraps. But the good thing for Keaton is he's shown in his, you know, young career, he can be an efficient runner. So if Keaton is only getting 2 to 3 carries, maybe one of them goes for 10-plus yards. So you'll take that, but I think he's going to make his money this year on special teams.
You know, we're sitting here talking about this, and we sound like we're PR hacks for the Ravens, but it's hard to find negatives out there right now, isn't it?
I mean, when they're good, they're good.
Yeah.
You can't argue. And I mean, they have question marks. Special teams is definitely a huge question mark for them this year. Rookie kicker, their punter hasn't been the most consistent. Jordan Stout.
Yeah.
He hasn't been great. And look, they just literally drafted a rookie to be their punt returner because they didn't have one at all last year, despite trotting out like 4 or 5 different guys. So, and penalties were a major issue for them last year.
That's been
an issue for them so far in camp. So there are little knickknacks you could throw at this team, but overall, no doubt, I mean, they're a really good football team.
Here's a big coincidence. Stout and Loop, it's their birthday
I saw
today.
That.
They share a birthday.
Yeah, I mean, how could you not be on the same page? You were born on the same day.
It's amazing. I don't know if I ever told you when we first saw Justin Tucker. They had a weekend morning practice, and we all had to go out and cover it, and none of us know who he is. The skinny guy wearing number 6, and he's booming things from 65 yards. And we called Chad Steele over, and we said, Chad, who's number 6? And he looks at his list, and he said, you know, I don't know. So he ran in a building, and he came back out, and he's reading off a piece of paper. His name's Justin Tucker. He went to University of Texas, and that's how he started his career. You talk about humble beginnings,
right.
You know? All right, stick around. Much more of the Vinny and Haney Show coming up. Believe me, from noon to 2, we are at the absolute bottom of the list. But we'll get through this. Don't worry. 410-583-1057. Let's go to the phones. PT and Towson, what's going on?
Hey, guys. Cordo, you mentioned music earlier. And Quick Draw, he had Queen's Dragon Attack on last week. I mean, he's consistently playing like songs that a lot of people may not have heard a lot, but a great song. So I really appreciate what Quick Draw's doing. But I'm going to talk about baseball. I think the fan base here is understandably disappointed. It's one of the most disappointed seasons, you know, that we've experienced because the expectations are so high. But I feel like some of that obviously has leaked into fans being overly emotional. And when you look at the infield, you got Westberg, Gunner, and Holiday. These guys are all going to be perennial all-stars each year. And then the platoon at first and catcher, you're talking about, you know, Mayo, Mountcastle, Basayo, and Adley. It's hard to, you know, top that as well. My question for you, though, is the outfield. I think you can see that Kowser's going to be, an above-average corner outfielder, and Beaver's OPS right now is superior in AAA than what Gunner, Kowser, and Westberg did at AAA. So we should all be really excited about the 23-year-old Beavers. But Beavers is similar defensively to Kowser in that he's probably a slightly below average center fielder, but would be an above average corner outfielder. So my question to you, long way around, is who in the heck is going to play center field for the Orioles next season?
I mean, that's the big question that I've had.
Me too.
PT, and you know, that was one of the reasons why I wasn't necessarily pushing Ramon Laureano out the door, because he had team control for next year, and you just said it. What does this outfield look like next year? Beaver should be a part of it. Kowser, I mean, as of now, it looks like he will be. I don't know what the future holds for Kowser.
As soon as I heard that they traded Mullins, I assumed that Kowser was going to be the center fielder.
I don't know if I'm to the point to where I'm saying Kowser should or will be a bona fide piece of this team's future long term. I just need more from him, to be honest with you. But even if he is out there, and you throw Tyler O'Neill into the group, maybe they go out and add another veteran as well.
I was going to suggest that, PT. I was going to say maybe that center fielder in 2026 isn't on this roster right now.
Yeah, I could see that. But and Kowser, like you
I think we
lost only 13 walks this year. So it's concerning, but he has been a guy that it's taken a year maybe to adjust to a new level. So obviously we're all hoping that his stick comes around. But if you, not next year, but in 26, if the outfield's Cowser, Beavers, and Enrique Bradfield, I don't know that there's going to be a better fielding outfield in baseball. I hope you agree with me there, right?
Maybe. I mean, yeah. I got to see more from Bradfield.
I really do too.
I got to see him stay healthy as well. He's battled with injury. So, I mean, it's a lot of unknowns. And everything that we thought we knew about this group, we don't. We don't. A couple of years ago, we thought Adley would be the best catcher in baseball right now. He's not.
Uh-uh.
That's just the reality of it all. We thought Westberg would be, you know, be this godsend. And I know he's dealt with injuries this year, and he had a great month of July, no doubt about it. But I think there are still question marks around all of these guys right now.
Oh, I completely agree with you. And I think that's why we do have to make a coaching change. Because you look at all these guys, you know, Westberg, Gunner, et cetera, all the stars. They've all taken a step back offensively. So you get in a new coach and a new hitting, you know, ideas. You know, we've got to look to take more walks and strike out less, for goodness sake.
All right.
You know?
All right, PT, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. He makes some valid points there. What he didn't mention is, let's agree here. It doesn't look like the manager's coming back, right?
No.
So then it's incumbent for the new manager, and there are a lot of good names out there to bring in his own assistants. But I don't know, when you're talking about underachievement of these young guys, and most of them have underachieved, Do you blame that on coaching? I don't know.
Well, you can't blame it on Manzalino necessarily,
oh, no.
But I think you do have to take a look at the organizational development progress process, because how many times have we seen them, you know, bring guys up here to the major league level and they're struggling to find a spot for them. Kobe Mayo's now at first base now, but where was he before? He was over at third base. And it's like, you can't take that all that time in the minors to figure that out. And Mayo was down there much longer than he wanted to be. But, you know, I think that's the thing. I do think this offseason they have to look at everything they do,
everything.
from the top down, and figure out their entire process and what's working, what's not. Also, you look at guys getting hurt as much as they have, all these soft tissue injuries. I get it. Pitchers are falling off all over the league, but this has been an epidemic for them.
That's a pet peeve of mine. They changed trainers,
mm-hmm.
and they hired somebody that nobody knew. And we haven't seen any improvement of all. In fact, if anything,
it's
getting worse.
It's gotten worse.
Let's go to Bill in Bayview. Bill, what's going on?
Hi. Listen, I didn't want to get back on the Ravens,
but when
I called you, okay. It seemed to me when you were talking about the Ravens and who plays and what regulars play during the preseason. And they usually don't play them.
No.
Ever since the year, a couple years ago, when they got hurt, a bunch of them.
J.K. Dobbins, I remember that, man. Remember Dobbins' first preseason game?
Yeah. It almost like somebody looked at him and his leg went down. But what I'm saying, and I understand that, but it's a dilemma, because I've noticed the last 3 years, the first five games of the year, or maybe less, maybe four, it seems like they're the exhibition games.
They're not in sync, are they?
No, they're crap. All them penalties from offside, and then coupled with the left tackle coming back from that horrendous injury
Stanley, everything.
Yeah. I mean, it's just, and are they going to do the same thing again this year? They're gonna need to win their division this year.
Yeah,
I'm not worrying. You know, Super Bowl, we're all talking that. We're all putting ourselves on the
way.
You know
something, Bill? If they just get through the month of September, I'll be happy.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a tougher start to the season?
I mean, at Buffalo, back home for Cleveland, which is the Browns, but it's a division game,
and the Browns give them hell.
Yep, and Detroit the next week at home on Monday night, then go to Kansas City. On a short week,
and you're not even to October yet.
Yeah, I mean that's going to be brutal. And look, I to the caller's point, I don't think necessarily you're going to see the Ravens do anything different in the preseason than they have the last couple of years. John has opted to take some of that early season rust over potential long term injuries that you get in the preseason, and I'm fine with that. But I agree, they can't get off to a slow start. I do think it's important for them to try to win this conference this year and get as many home playoff games as possible.
All right, Bill, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. I can understand where the fans might be a little bit dismayed by that. And it reminds me, Tom Matte used to tell me, up until 1974, this will floor you if you don't already know it. Up until 1974, each team had six preseason games. Can you imagine?
That's a lot.
Six preseason games. And what would happen is they would play them in other cities. Like the Colts would have home games in Louisville or Birmingham or wherever. But six preseason games, that's an awful lot.
I mean, and teams are starting to play their guys more. Mahomes gets run in the preseason these days. So, I mean, if he's out there, you feel like anybody should be out there. But, again, the Ravens have their own philosophy. And to their credit, they have been healthier these last few years.
They really have. I mean, what was it, 3 years ago? That was the horrible year.
Terrible.
They have been. Let's get real quick here before we go to break. Let's go to Kent Island, get John. John, you got good timing.
Hey, appreciate it, guys. Hey, I've been watching all the replays of the games last year, and what's amazed me is how many times the punt returner for the Ravens never fielded the ball. How many punts actually bounced versus were caught? There was one against Houston, one against Cincinnati, down at the one-yard line, converted to a safety the next play. And I know John Harbaugh is a special teams genius, but what does it take to catch a punt?
The rule of thumb throughout the NFL, and Cordell will agree with this, is don't touch a punt inside the 20-yard line. You know, you just let that thing bounce and hope that it goes into the end zone. But you're right, a lot of punts hit the ground against the Ravens last year.
Yeah, some of that was just honestly lack of confidence that they could even catch the punt. and sometimes, honestly, you start to see a guy bobble a punt on this first attempt, and then the next time they're just getting away from it no matter where it's bouncing. They just didn't have anybody to return punts last year that they felt confident in. And that's why you saw them cycling through so many different guys.
Yeah.
Very rarely is that the case. So I think, again, they drafted LaJonte Wester to serve as that role. He has had his moments to where catching a punt has been a struggle for him. But I do think he's stacking some days. Yesterday at the stadium was a really good day for him catching punts. I didn't see him drop any. So that's a good sign, especially when you're at the stadium and you got all the fans out there. That's their first time really getting a taste of what it will start to feel like when these games start to get real, at least somewhat real for guys like him on Thursday.
And then for the young guys to get a hit in the ear hole Thursday night, that's important too. John, don't you agree?
Yep. Yeah, I agree. I tell you, the reason why Lamar had so many long touchdown drives is because they were always starting from the 5 yards or in.
Yeah, you're right about that. Thanks for the call, Bill. We appreciate it. All right, coming up, the Orioles just finished up with the Cubs. We're going to talk about that series. Did you like it? Did you not like it? Are you encouraged? Are you discouraged? That's next on the Vinny and Haney Show. We playing basketball, and the coach's office had a record player, and that was one of the songs, the 45s that they had for the record player. So I can remember warming up to this with nobody in the stands because it was JV, you know, but still that song, that's the kind of memories it brings back. I'm hoping we hear from Rashawn today. Because Rashawn called my show Saturday. He and his buddy Dustin were up at Wrigley Field for the series. And I told him about this famous bar up there called the Cubby Bear. I said, after the game, go to the Cubby Bear. So they do that, and Dustin gets them thrown out. And Rashawn put up a video online. So, Rashawn, if you listen, I want to hear from you. There he is right there, I'll bet you. 410-583-1057. This weekend series against the Cubs, after all the action on Thursday, it was going to be interesting just to see what kind of team they would field. But you know what? They lost, Cordell, but they were very competitive, and there seemed to be a lot of fighting spirit there that we hadn't seen.
Yeah, I mean, outside of the game one where you get a gem from Trevor Rogers, again, who has really done a great job of turning his season around. I give him all the credit. He's really been the brightest spot of this Orioles team this season, in what has become a lost year.
But they gave up a lot to get him.
Yeah.
But give Elias credit. He stuck to his guns on that one, and it looks like it's paying off.
Yeah, I mean, Stowers, that's just turned out to be a really good trade. Stowers has gone on to obviously have an all-star type of year. He's a big part of the Marlins being as hot as they are right now, sweeping the Yankees. But Trevor Rogers, yeah, I mean, with all the question marks about this Orioles rotation, not just this year, but going forward, Trevor Rogers has given a little bit of stability on that front. So definitely a great outing from him. Eight innings of one run ball. Just a shame the lineup couldn't give him much. But the next day it looks like it's going to be the same thing. Just looks like a lifeless lineup. And then all of a sudden you get to the eighth inning and you get a couple of ducks on the pond and Gunnar flexes the muscles and that game turns around in the blink of an eye. And similarly yesterday, that was more back and forth. Offense got a little more offense yesterday, a couple of errors as well, which has plagued them throughout the year. And then they get walked off on the back end, aching back-to-back days, trying to get a save. That's just going to be the way that it is. This bullpen has been depleted.
Oh my gosh.
After the trade deadline. So the back end of the games, you might have to cover your eyes a little bit, but for me, I just want to see what we believe to be this core, the young core of this team, prove that.
Mike Bordick was on a morning show when I'm driving in. I don't know if you heard him on there, but he made a really good point. He said the rest of this season is going to be a tryout camp.
Mm-hmm. It should be. Nothing should be given. Nothing should be given. In my mind, I'm going to be honest with you. In my mind, outside of Gunnar and Holiday, and I'll even throw Westberg in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, other than that, everybody else, I'm watching. Like, you have to show me something going forward, because it can't be this. And even those three guys, like, lead the charge. I everybody's talking about how they traded away their veteran leaders and Mullins and O'Hearn, and they did, but that has also opened the door for guys like Gunnar to now step into that leadership role, Adley to step into that leadership role. I think Westberg has kind of taken that more than the other two guys have. But it's time for the young guys to become the adults in the room now.
Yeah, that's a very, very, very good point. I'm glad you said that. Ryan in Baltimore wanted to talk Orioles and Cubs. Ryan, what's going on?
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
Listen, so yesterday's game, I'll put that aside. That was just a good competitive baseball game that we just happened to be on the losing end of, which that's baseball. It stinks. And then obviously Saturday we had the good come from behind win. Can't complain about that. But what bugs me is Friday's game with Trevor Rogers' gem. I mean, he was going out there for the ninth if we tied it up. But I just felt like that.
Hey, Ryan, when's the last time you saw a guy throw a complete game and lose?
Oh, it's been,
you know,
I don't think I've ever seen. I mean, I'm only 23 years old, so it's been, you know, it might have never happened in my time. But, you know, it was just so frustrating that here's a guy who's pitching his butt off, who has been consistently good for us, and we can't have the offense make the necessary adjustments. I understand it's windy in Wrigley. It's windy in Chicago. But I felt like we were still trying to elevate and play the home run ball versus, hey, let's try to do some up-the-middle singles, get some runners going, bunt some guys over. Like, I know that's not the MO of the MLB anymore, but like sometimes you got to look at the weather, stick your finger up in the air, throw some blades of grass and say, yeah, this ball's not going to make it out of here. I mean, Gunnar's home run on Saturday, they said it was what, 110, 112 off the bat, and it still went to the front row of the seats. So it wasn't like he was hitting moonshots, but you know, I was just really, really frustrated with that Friday game. But what I'll say is this, even though that we've had the big trades of the veterans and stuff, I want to see our core just do what they're doing. It was nice to see Gunnar get that home run. It's nice to see when Jackson's making great plays out in the making that cutoff play with the Jackson 3. We need two guys named Jackson. They have a good T-shirt called the Jackson 5. All right. But, you know, I just want to see that good competitiveness. I saw something today with the Kyle Stowers trade. You guys brought it up.
Yeah.
They compared Kyle Stowers and Trevor Rogers, and they said, what do you guys think of this trade? And someone commented and said, seems like a win on both sides, which is exactly how a trade
should go. It's starting to look that way, isn't it?
Yep. And I was skeptical with how Rogers performed last year, but it's nice to see him doing what he did his rookie year and being a good performer for us. And honestly, I think if he keeps it up for the rest of the year, which I think he will, I would give him the MVO, honestly, now that Laureano's gone.
It's an interesting point. Thanks for the call. Who would you give the MVO to?
It's going to be tough right now. I mean, he makes the point of Rogers. You look through the lineup. I don't think there's anybody in the lineup right that's still left on this team right now that you're giving it to. It would have to be almost Rogers by default. The pitchers have been depleted. The bullpen guys are all gone.
Gunner's been up and down.
Yeah, I mean, Gunner's still been good. It's just his power numbers haven't been there. And maybe he still does get it. He might still get it. But in my mind, the top three are between Rodgers, Gunner, and probably Holiday.
Yeah, I would think that those would be the three. I'm trying to think of others, and I just can't. Interesting. Well, they're in Philly tonight.
Mm-hmm.
Philadelphia, they're not quite as disappointing as the Ravens, but I think the folks in Philadelphia were expecting a little bit more out of this club. This should be an interesting series from that standpoint.
Yeah, I mean, and they're one of the teams that were very aggressive at the deadline. So, you know, they went obviously added a couple of guys to their roster. So I do think you're going to start to get more consistency from the Phillies, but the National League is completely wide open right now. And so much talk about the Dodgers coming into the season, and the Padres are taking over a lot of that talk out there in the NL West with what they did at the deadline. But yeah, you look at the Phillies right now, still only a half game over the Mets, and the Mets, another team that was very aggressive at the deadline that came into the year really good. That'll be a dogfight, and the Marlins, they're not going away. They keep trying to keep their name in that wild card hunt. So that NL East has been more competitive than I think people initially probably thought that it was going to be. But yeah, I do think that the Phillies will give the Orioles a lot of problems.
All right, real quick, Nolan, before we go to break, we got to take Rashawn, okay? Give you the background. Rashawn was in Chicago this weekend, Cordell, and he had his buddy Dustin with him, and they called my show, and I gave him the bar to go to. And Rashawn, tell me what happened after you got to the Cubby Bear.
Man, it was about 30, 40 minutes in, man, then I just turn around, man. You know, I see the security guard, like, jacking Dustin up, man, you know, escorting to the exit. You know, I'm like, what the hell happened? What the hell going on, man? You know, but I guess he got into some back and forth with a Cubs fan. Because you remember we won that game that day. And then, you know, we was talking, I guess Dustin was talking smack. And then the guy said, well, y'all in last place, man. We in first place, you know, and a little threat.
Rashawn handed his phone to Dustin and put Dustin on, and I said, Dustin, do not get thrown out of this bar. No, man, I won't. And sure enough, there it was. If nothing else, Rashawn, he's consistent.
Hey, Bruce, we still here, man. We on our way trying to get back home, man. We got a flight late on this evening, man. Dustin right here, man. Say what's up.
Okay. What's up, okay, Dustin, how you doing? Okay, guys, thanks for calling in. We got to hit a break. I appreciate it. But that was an exciting trip to Chicago that ended in a very predictable way. Stick around. Hour number two of the Vinny and Haney Show's right ahead. And coming up at 11, my pal Steve Molesky is going to join us. I'll tell you some stuff about me and Steve that I bet you didn't know. Stick around.